Fatale, Shane Bauer, and Sarah Short have turned their experience into a riveting memoir and a powerful indictment of solitary confinement. Tune in to a deeper look when Josh Fatale joins me, Linda Olsen Osterlund, to talk about their new book, A Sliver of Light, Three Americans Imprisoned in Iran. That's a deeper look, Thursday, May 8th at 9:30 a.m. right here on KBOO.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Mobilizing Local Culture, a University of Oregon Arts Management workshop in Portland, June 23rd through 28th, showcasing the ways in which local culture mobilized to make a difference in neighborhoods across the city. More info at aad.uoregon.edu/summer intensive.
Oh boy. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Good morning. You're listening to More Talk Radio on your community radio station, KBOO FM. In Corvallis, that's 104.3. In Hood River, it's 91.9. And in Portland, it's 90.7. And via the World Wide Web, it is KBOO.FM. My name is Cecil Prescott, and I'll be joined shortly by my co-host, Celeste Carey. Today is Monday, the 5th of May, 2014. We thank you for joining and remind you that we are in the midst of our spring membership drive. So you may become a member by going to kboo.fm and follow the donation instruction, or give us a call here at 877-500-5266 and become a member of your community radio station, an opportunity to make sure that community independent radio remains a powerful force in our neighborhood. Let me remind you before we begin our program of a couple of activities that you may be interested in. And this is, again, a testimony of what community radio can do. On this Wednesday at May 7th, there's a KBOO community forum sponsored, and it will take place at Portland State University. The topic is Organizing and Winning for 21st Century Movements. It is a free KBOO forum, and speakers will include renowned activist author Stephen Early, Johanna Brenner, Arun Gupta, also Gwen Sullivan, a Portland public school teacher and organizers. The four of them have written about and participated in movements much like the recent campaigns by Portland Public Schools and PSU professor. They activated their members, they reached out and won the community and student support that carried the day. This is called social movement organizing, and it applies to every political struggle. This forum is free. Donations will be accepted, but this is an opportunity for you to participate, to learn, to find out about what will be effective struggles in the 21st century. And this is directly related to our program this morning, because joining us this morning is Michael Utrecht, who is the author of Strike for America, Chicago Teachers Against Austerity. Many of you are familiar with the Chicago Teachers struggle a couple of years ago, and it is a model of organizing, of effective organizing and challenging the political structure and those forces which will are anti-union, anti-worker. Micah is also with the magazine Jacobin, and we thank you for joining us today, Mr. Utrecht.
Good morning.
My pleasure.
We are excited to have you here with us, and we just want to let you know that we are breaking periodically for urging people to join this community radio station. But I thought we might begin for you to share a little bit of a short history of about what happened in Chicago a couple of years ago with the organizing of the Chicago Teachers Union and their struggle with their education board.
Sure. So I think, as a kind of big picture setup, a lot of people think of unions as sort of acting a certain way, one way. All unions act this way. They all do this thing. They all have these tendencies without realizing that there are very often struggles within unions over what their unions are going to look like.
What the agenda is going to be.
Exactly. And that can often take the character of one faction of a union who wants to just fight for a kind of narrow agenda for their members on fighting for issues like better pay and better benefits and things like that, but not really see itself as tied to any kind of broader movement versus a unionism that wants to fight for those things like better pay and better benefits, but also sees their organization and the union as part of a broader movement of the working class, a broader movement for social justice. And so that is a fight that took place within the Chicago Teachers Union over the past decade and a half or so. There had been since the 90s, this move toward these kind of free market education reform styles of laws that were being passed, and school closures were happening, or schools were being "quote unquote" turned around, which would mean that all of the people, all the staff in a school would be fired, and it would be turned over to a private charter operator. These attacks on teachers are sort of ramping up, and so the union, the Chicago Teachers Union leadership, is seen by many of its members as not really engaging in a battle over those really critical issues. And so the short story, the longer story, which I tell in the book, is that a group of rank-and-file classroom teachers are sort of fed up with that kind of unionism and challenge their old leadership and take over in 2010. And that is through a caucus that is referred to as the Caucus of Rank-and-File Educators. And so a lot of the people that folks in Chicago are familiar with, like Karen Lewis, are all members of that caucus. And so when you're thinking about this strike that happened in 2012 and everything that the CTU has done in the past couple of years, it's important to realize that all of it has happened because of this internal fight within the union and because the Caucus of Rank and File Educators was able to take over and change the way their union did business.
So, Michael, can you tell us what was going on within the union that caused it to be a little stiff and out of touch? Chicago has working class roots, and so it's really interesting that you would have a union that would not respond to the fact that these are some of the very same social issues in the larger sense that many of the earlier union activists were working for.
Yeah, so the caucus, the one that had been in power for several decades, was called the United Progressive Caucus, and they were a caucus that came out of a lot of really important racial justice struggles in the 60s and 70s within Chicago public schools. And they were a coalition of different groups who formed this caucus and were for many years were a pretty strong caucus and took the union out on strike, I think, 7 or 8 times from the 60s to the 80s. But when the era of kind of neoliberalism and ramped up attacks on unions started happening, these teachers were not, by the time of the 1990s, were not willing to really mount an effective challenging agenda against the school board. They had gotten themselves pretty comfortable positions within the union. I mean, they were making, by all accounts, quite a bit of money, very generous with their expense accounts. They were very friendly with a lot of the power brokers of the city, and they sort of saw themselves as kind of the junior partners of the city's elites. As a junior partner of the mayor or different power brokers throughout the city, you don't need to go on strike or really go to battle. You're a reasonable person. You can cut a deal with them, right? And so that was the sort of culture of the union that had been created around the time of the 1990s. And it led to for a while that produced some gains. I mean, the previous mayor, Richard Daley, didn't want to upset the teachers' union a lot of times. He would sort of give them a lot of what they wanted in contract negotiations because he didn't want to have to deal with a bunch of angry teachers in the streets. But it became clear into the 90s and 2000s that because the union had such a cordial relationship with the city, they had lost all ability to even to mobilize its members if they did feel like they were under attack. And so so by the 90s and 2000s, they had succumbed to these kind of conservatizing and bureaucratizing forces, and were very, the leadership of the CTU itself was quite comfortable, but the membership was increasingly losing its jobs and losing ground.
And we want to mobilize members based on what you were talking about and not succumb to those forces that make you stiff, unresponsive, and out of touch. And we want to urge people who are listening, who understand the importance of broadening the scope of your activism, to embrace the larger picture, to call in here. Call in here if you're seeing the big picture, and become a member and support an activist voice. Not just our voice, but your voice.
That's right, because KABU is here for everyone. Good morning, Celeste. Good morning, Cecil. I'm Ani. And it is my pleasure to be spending this morning with you, letting folks know the importance of community radio, and they're part of it. I mean, I know, listener, you are listening because you recognize the importance. You know that this is the place that you can come and find great information. We are talking this morning about the importance of labor, of struggle, of coming together as community to actually make sure that we can stand up against, the forces that otherwise, let's just say, want to keep us down. Let's just say that. We'll cut to the chase. Right now, you have an important part to play in this. We are independent media. We are independent because you supply us with our financial support. You are our grassroots, and you are what keeps us strong and together. We are here to serve the community, and we ask that the community actually be there to pay the bills and to keep us going. It's a reciprocating relationship. So 877-500-5266 is the number to call. You can be a part of independent media this morning. Very simply, just take a moment right now and call 877-500-5266. And we have only three copies of Strike for America, Chicago Teachers Against Austerity. You're hearing about this struggle right now, and you can get a copy of this book if you act very quickly, dialing 877-500-5266 and say yes to community radio and tell the person answering the phone that you would like to get a copy of Strike for America as your thank you gift. A little extra enticement, a little extra sweetener so that you can keep this information going around in your community. You can share the book. You can get really in-depth information that you are hearing about. You're hearing the conversation this morning. You can read in far more depth in the book, and you can do it all by calling 877-500-5266. Just $5 a month is one way to contribute $60 over the course of a year. I know for me, $5 a month is well easier to come up with than $60 at any one given time. So maybe you want to go ahead and start an electronic funds transfer. This is a monthly automatic deduction from your checking account to make sure that your support to KABU continues until you tell it to stop. 877-500-5266. Once you start it, nothing more to remember except you know that your support is coming in to keep independent media strong in your area, that your support is keeping KABU on the air. 877-500-5266.
And also, you can go online, kboo.fm. We have the donation jar upper right-hand corner. You can pledge now.
And we're continuing our conversation with Micah Utrick, author of Strike for America, Chicago Teachers Against Austerity. And before we went to our break, you were sharing something about how the union, at least part of the union leadership, had morphed into this cozy relationship with those in government, and has lost contact or with its roots in terms of organizing and addressing real issues. I think what happened in Chicago serves as a template about what's going on in throughout the nation in terms of, one, unions' relationship with the establishment, particularly the Democratic Party, and also a model about what a model of how organizers can mobilize a community. Celeste mentioned before of the historic history of Chicago and its working class roots. Chicago is a predominantly Democratic city with a Democratic establishment. Say something about maybe specifically about union's relationship with the Democratic Party, and maybe something about its relationship in Chicago itself, and what are the challenges that people there faced.
Sure. So, as you mentioned, Chicago is a totally Democratic city. In our city council, for example, 49 of the 50 city councilors are members of the Democratic Party. But in Chicago, just as has been the case nationwide, on issues of education reform, the Democratic Party's agenda does not look significantly different from the Republican Party's. I mean, the Democratic Party embraces charter schools, embraces the continuing privatization of public education, basically has signed on to quite a number of the attacks that have come up against public school teachers. And so in many ways, what the Democrats are pushing for education doesn't look that much different from what the right wing has won. And I think at the classroom level, a number of teachers have become very frustrated by that, especially since a constituency like public school teachers have in the past been thought of sort of as a very important constituency within the Democratic Party. These are people who are, interested in serving their communities and want strong funding of public education and back Democratic candidates. And then so to see how the party has turned on them in many ways has been an eye-opening thing for quite a few people. And so one of the really important things that the union has done is they haven't been afraid to push back on the party, on a party that is pushing that kind of agenda, which is not true for much of the labor movement, despite the fact that there have been these kind of repeated betrayals over the years and decades of the labor movement, of unions, by the Democratic Party. Unions have sort of stuck to their strategy that they've had basically since the 1930s of just giving lots and lots of money, putting lots of boots on the ground to folks, to Democratic candidates in order to get them elected, without really seeing many returns. And I think the Democratic Party has seen that the union movement is not going to really push back, not really demand much from them, despite the fact that they are giving them all of these resources. So it has allowed them to slip it sort of further and further to the right on many issues of labor in general and on education specifically. And so one of the great contributions of the Chicago Teachers Union has been their willingness to say certain sections of the Democratic Party, just because they're Democrats does not mean they're our friends. They are pursuing a really harmful agenda to our children, to our schools, and to our professions. And they haven't been afraid to call those people out and to organize against them. I mean, during the strike, there were numerous demonstrations that were organized just by rank-and-file teachers, not even done by the official union leadership, that were protests on individual city council members' offices. And, of course, the entire strike was mainly pitted the Chicago Teachers Union against Rahm Emanuel, our mayor, who is one of the most powerful Democrats in the entire country. And so that willingness to be honest about the betrayals that the labor movement has faced from Democrats, and a willingness to really push back against them is a kind of unique contribution of the Chicago Teachers Union.
We're going to do another break here, but when we come back, I want to talk about how the shift and some of the activist teachers help broaden their base of power by collaborating with community activists in other areas. And I'm going to use that whole idea as a transition, listeners. One of the wonderful things about KBOO is that this is a collaborative effort, a broad-based effort of lots of different activist groups, if you will. All of us don't necessarily have the same specific points of agenda, but we recognize some important things, and that is none of us are going to prosper if any one of us who are out here working for a wage that's not a living wage don't prosper. And number two, we need a strong collective voice. A strong collective voice is what community media gives you, and that support that you give us gives us the freedom to address those other issues that sometimes and somehow just don't make it to the surface in mainstream media. Isn't that true, Ani?
It is so very true, Celeste. It is so very true. And that is the importance of KBOO. That is why you are listening to community radio, because we're a little different. And we do connect so many different struggles and so many different communities. We have had an emphasis on knowing where the ties are and how struggles support each other. And right now, we need you to be there to support this community effort that supports so many individual struggles and movements to actually make this world a better, more sustainable, and empowered place. Right now, you can be a very important part of that. Just dial 877-500-5266, or online, you can donate at kboo.fm. I want to thank Calvin for renewing this morning. I want to thank Barbara for renewing in Southeast Portland. I want to thank George for renewing in Southwest Portland. Cindy, I want to thank you for becoming a new member of KBOO this morning. Thank you, Cindy in Salem. And thank you, Paul, for renewing your membership in Southwest Portland. We have really appreciated your calls of support. And now we need to ask you to join in, Cindy and Paul and George and Barbara and Calvin, and say yes to community radio. You too want to be an active participant. You are knowing that, independent media is not a spectator sport. It takes your participation to keep us going and to keep us thriving for another 46 years. KBOO has been there for the community, for labor, for the fights, in so many many areas in terms of economic justice, racial justice, gender justice. We are there in the struggle for a good education, for the future, for health care. We are there for all of these struggles and more. And we need you, again, one more time, to be there for us, saying, yes, you are going to sponsor some KBOO Radio, your very own self, because you, in fact, are our sponsors. You are our grassroots, and we are Grassroots Community Radio. 877-500-5266. I go ahead and suggest that you think about contributing on a monthly way. I know that it allows me to give a far more significant contribution over the course of a year than it would than I would be able to otherwise. And I contribute about an hour's wage every month. So if you can think about doing that same thing, if you are making $12 an hour, think about maybe giving $10 or $12 a month. If you're making $15 an hour, think about giving around $15 a month and working that 1 hour for your community, knowing that you are a part of this struggle for justice. You are a part of the struggle for empowerment of the people to go ahead and make our world a better place together, and that you are going to use KBOO as one of your vehicles to do that. 877-500-5266, or online, join us at kboo.fm. Perhaps you are out and about, perhaps you're on your way to your day job or to school. Stop on by 20 Southeast 8th this morning and get a tour of the station and find out how KBOO is made, looking at it from the inside out. You can make your pledge and pay it in person. We would love to meet you and say thank you when you do that. However it is easy for you to connect this morning, we are just asking that you connect right now. Don't put it off another minute. We are looking to raise $500 this morning for More Talk Radio with Celeste and Cecil. You know that you rely on their voices every week to start off your week with their perspectives on current information, current news and topics. And you have, they're your radio buddies, right?
Yes, we are.
Yeah.
We are your radio buddies. And Ani has been really eloquent and spelling out how important it is for you to connect, but I want to spell out how important it is to us that you connect. You give us the strength to get out here and get this information, and you are our boots on the ground. You may not feel like you're out there marching or gathering news or being the news anchor or programmer, but you are. You're behind us and you're keeping us strong. And your contribution does a lot. It not only helps us, but you get a tax benefit. You get to deduct what you contribute to KABU so that your money contributes many times over. And once you become a member and you take your card to like-minded businesses, you can get discounts. And you know what? If you pledge today, how much would a pledge be to get a copy of this wonderful book? It kind of helps tie people back into the power of unity, Ani. How much is the pledge for the book?
That is only $60. And I have to say, people should be acting fast. We only have two left. And for your $60 minimum contribution to KABU, you get to be a member of KABU and you get a copy of Strike for America, Chicago Teachers Against Austerity. So it's kind of a twofer, right? You are knowing that you are doing your part to support community media, that you are doing your part to keep the airwaves strong so that we can reach Southwest Washington and Northwest Oregon. We can reach through the Willamette Valley down to Philomath and up to about Mossy Rock. You know that you are keeping the conversation vital and vibrant, really around the world, wherever people can tune in to KBOO.FM, where you can actually contribute right there on our website, KBOO.FM, or call 877-500-5266 and say, yeah, you can contribute $60 this morning and you would like one of those last two remaining copies of Strike for America, Chicago Teachers Against Austerity. Give us a call right now. Support KABU Community Radio. Don't put it off another minute. Just call 877-500-5266.
And before we took a break here to encourage people to be active, we were talking about how the activists within the Chicago Teachers Union looked at both how the leadership was not responsive and how their goals and agendas and concerns are being very narrowly defined. But if I understand correctly from your book, there was a group who thought that leadership could be challenged, but they weren't necessarily challenging it on any broader basis themselves, and their attempt at shifting leadership was based on, well, we're not those guys, so to speak.
That's right. So in 2001, there was a challenge to the previous leadership that I've mentioned, the United Progressive Caucus, by a group of more liberal teachers, people who wanted to reform their union, who called themselves PAC, the Proactive Chicago Teachers. And their basic line, what they campaigned on was, these people are, these previous leadership folks are corrupt, they're inept, elect us and we will make it better, basically. We will take care of the problems for you. So there was not any kind of changed vision of how the leadership should be interacting with the membership on a day-to-day basis. It was not any kind of new ideas for empowering the 26,000 members of the Chicago Teachers Union and having them really lead the union's agenda. It was just sort of like, we are smarter and more honest people, so elect us and let us take care of you. And that, this is part of the story I tell in the book, that caucus won in 2001. They won control of the union, but negotiated a contract that was largely no different from the previous contracts that the old conservative leadership had negotiated, and treated their membership, frankly, in sort of patronizing ways. I mean, treated them like they weren't adults who weren't, tried to sell them this contract as something better than it was. And so that effort failed. And so the people who came around in the mid-2000s after this previous reform caucus had voted out after one term looked at this failed reform effort and thought to themselves, we know that there is some appetite within our union for change, but we can see that if we just do this kind of top-down change and we don't see any kind of new role for the membership to take in the union on a day-to-day level and to increase the level of democracy and increase the capacity of those members to actually act in the union, then we're not going to be able to get anywhere. And so they had this vision of a different kind of unionism, both from the one that had the more conservative old-school unionism that had failed, but also this top-down reform effort that had failed. And so the way that they went about creating this organization is worth explaining some detail about. So usually when you think of someone who's willing to run for office, they just think that, okay, within a union or wherever, you think, okay, these people think pretty highly of themselves. They think they've got a vision for how to change this union that is better than everybody else. Rather than creating that kind of organization immediately in the mid-2000s after the old reform folks had left, they decided, no, what we need to do is really join the efforts on the ground from community members that had already been going on for several years, that had already been fighting these school closures and turnarounds and all of these kind of free market education reform pieces of legislation. So the caucus's roots are in these fights with these alongside these community groups, and so they had created a really strong coalition between teachers and the community members that was organic. That was not something that was just done so these teachers could say, "Oh, look, we've got community support. Here they are, right here." But no, they spent years building alongside of these community members. You know, community members would always show up to hearings about a closure of a school. Begging the school board not to close their school because, of course, the school would be closed and it would be replaced often in the same neighborhood with a private charter school operator.
Mm-hmm.
And the teachers would show up and would speak alongside these parents and these community members, and then would speak with them afterwards about, hey, you know, we're trying to create a large citywide movement so that it's not just you down here in your neighborhood by yourself fighting against these schools. School closures, but it's you alongside people who from throughout the city and people who are also teachers and all that stuff who can push back against this. So this is what they're doing for years is really slowly creating a larger and larger organization that, as I said, engages with new people in the union who had never been active in the union before, and they're really doing the things that the union leadership themselves should have been doing, like organizing against school closures and organizing closely with parents and community members.
Micah, can you put this in context of the timeline? So, because when you hear this, it sounds as though, because it was rooted over time, it sounds as though it was happening parallel to the progressive teachers' effort to change leadership. Is that true?
Well, so the PACT, the sort of top-down reformers that I mentioned,
right.
They win office in 2001,
right,
and are voted out after just one term.
One term.
In the mid-2000s, when the UPC, sorry for the alphabet soup here, but the UPC, the conservative, you know, the ones who had been in power for several decades, they returned to the office in the mid-2000s, and so it's around 2004, 2005 when these teachers start saying, okay, this reform effort failed. We're back with our old conservative leadership. And it's in the mid-2000s into the late 2000s that they begin working towards this organization that eventually becomes CORE. And so it's important to note, you know, within the union, we've got a reform effort that happened in 2001, which itself, you know, had been several years in the making. And then we've got that's the failure of that administration. And then in the mid-2000s and late 2000s, then CORE is working towards building itself. So this is by no means is this any kind of short-term project.
Right.
We're talking about, you know, a decade's worth or maybe more of struggle here before we end up in 2010 with the Caucus of Rank and File Educators. And so one of the things I say in the book is that there are really no kinds of shortcuts to building this kind of the fighting unionism that works alongside communities and has this really broad social justice agenda. I mean, that stuff is built, you know, one conversation at a time, one relationship built at a time, very slowly over time. That's the only way that we can do this kind of stuff. And so I think some people have looked at the Chicago Teachers Union and have taken some very important lessons from them, like the need to work alongside community groups and have a set of demands that are broader than just your pay and benefits. But that really critical piece of really slow democratic building up of the union over time and building real relationships with communities over time, that's something that takes quite a bit of time and a really serious commitment on behalf of people who are looking to reform a union. And so it's quite a bit of work. The payoff can be big, but it's a long-term project.
So tell us in terms specifically about what you and other people saw was won by the teachers' action in 2012. What was the victory? And also, what other lessons can we learn from that?
Sure. So the strike that happened in 2012. I mean, obviously, for folks who are not in unions might not know this, but in general, when a strike happens, it's usually around a contract negotiation period. And so they were battling over what was going to be in this contract for the teachers in 2012. When the strike happened in September of 2012, and just as a little bit of setup, it's very difficult to communicate exactly what the city of Chicago was like during this time. I mean, the strikes these days in 2014 don't happen very often. We don't see very many of them, and much less a strike that it literally blankets the entire city because, of course, these teachers we're at their schools every day. And so there are, you go in Chicago, it's a major city, dense city, so you go every four or five blocks and you see a new public school. And so every four or five blocks in the city, you are seeing huge swaths of teachers who are out on strike in red, and you go another four blocks and you see more of them. And so there was really this sort of, in the atmosphere of the city, in the air, was this sort of this feeling of struggle and the feeling that the teachers were actually winning. And so this kind of speaks to one of the more intangible things that the teachers won, and that they had clearly won over. You could feel it when you were out on the picket lines with these teachers, that in the air you could feel that they had won over the city of Chicago to their side. That the average Chicagoans didn't think that these teachers were greedy, lazy, overpaid, pampered public sector workers who were just throwing a public temper tantrum. They were actually out on the picket line representing the best interests of the children of the city of Chicago and of the city of Chicago itself. And so that, I think, is a really critical thing to list as a victory. I mean, during the strike, there were multiple polls that showed that the majority of Chicagoans backed the CTU over Mayor Rahm Emanuel. Even the majority of CPS parents, at the exact time that they are being, having to find alternative child care arrangements for their kids and all that stuff, they still back the union over Rahm Emanuel. So that is one of the more intangible victories that I think is important to talk about. There was a laundry list of free market reforms that the Board of Education that Rahm Emanuel wanted to win in this contract. I mean, they wanted to introduce merit pay, for example. They wanted to significantly increase the amount that standardized tests would count toward a teacher's evaluation. They had initially been seeking to lengthen the school day without really paying the teachers anything more, which effectively amounts to a pretty serious pay cut. They were aiming to negotiate down the pay and benefits and other things that they would have to pay the teachers if they closed their school. There's this huge list of kind of ideal free market reforms that would weaken the teachers' union, that would make it easier to close schools. And the teachers were able to beat back many of those provisions. There were some really important victories, and there were victories like the Chicago teachers won the right to have textbooks in class on the first day of school, which is a sort of insane thing to think about, that you have to go on strike and demand in your contract that you have a
a tool on Thursday that you have a tool.
Exactly. So they won that. I mean, they won more than a doubling of the budget that they get to be reimbursed for buying classroom supplies, which every teacher I've ever met tells stories of spending hundreds of dollars every year, if not thousands of dollars, on their classroom and buying stuff for their kids. So they won things like that. There's a long list if you can go through, but the bigger point is that, you know, right after the contract was negotiated, Karen Lewis, the president of the Chicago Teachers Union, said publicly, it was very honest with the membership, that this is not any kind of perfect contract. You know, we have won some gains here and we have beat back some really odious things, but this is an austerity contract. This is not perfect. So she was honest about the failures of the contract, where it succeeded and where it failed. But the bigger issue was that I think it sort of lit a spark, I think, for teachers' unions around the country. I mean,
yes.
Teachers' unions, I feel like many teachers around this country have seen these kind of reform efforts that have come about in the last couple of years,
yes,
and have been kind of baffled. I mean, why are these people, you know, pushing these charter schools when we know that charter schools don't actually perform any better than regular neighborhood public schools?
Mm-hmm.
Why am I, as someone who decided to make a lot of sacrifices in my life as a teacher, to teach and to, you know, take less money and work these long hours and really dedicate my life to these kids, why am I under attack? Why am I all of a sudden the one who's to blame for what's going on?
Why are we the bad guy?
Exactly. And so they've been kind of baffled by this. And I think one of the contributions of the CTU strike was to say, you know, make it very clear that these are not just some sort of misguided attacks that are happening on these teachers by some people who just have some kind of wrong ideas about whether or not these things will help change the public schools for the better. There is a really concerted, purposeful attack to dismantle public education and to turn it over to the private sector. And part of that attack, an essential part of that attack, is attacking teachers' unions.
Yes.
So if we're going to be able to maintain a strong public education system in the United States, teachers' unions are the ones who are going to have to fight for it, and they're going to have to do some fairly militant things sometimes, like go on strike. And so I think that is a lesson that has spread throughout the United States. Just in the, you know, we're only 2 years out of the strike now, but we right. see those lessons starting to spread in cities all over the country.
Well, certainly we saw some of that and some of that type of organizing here in Portland, when the Portland public school teachers almost went on strike. But in terms of community building,
yes.
we saw those expanded.
Right. Yeah.
So before we actually add additional voices to our pitch and our encouragement to get new members and returning members, Michael, can I get you to say a word or two about community media and its importance to not only an informed community, but a stronger community?
Well, it's clear, you know, especially at a time in the United States when media ownership is becoming put in smaller and smaller hands, and when we know that corporate-owned media serves the interests of the people who own them, of corporations, that the only way we're going to get any kind of modicum of truth in the 21st century through media is through supporting these projects like KABU that are really critical voices in communities to making sure that the truth gets out there and making sure that people's struggles are lifted up. Anyone who has ever worked on any kind of these issues before knows that the corporate media would rather run, I don't know, videos of celebrity gossip than cute cat videos rather than, you know, reporting on people's struggles on a day-to-day level. And so it's left to community voices like KABU to lift those kind of stories up. And so the only way that can happen is if average people chip in and support these kind of projects. So I would encourage everyone to support KABU and other forms of local community media, because they are so critical to maintaining a vibrant democracy and to making sure that these movements get the attention they deserve.
And so, listeners, if you heard that, you know what it says? It says that what you were thinking from the beginning is right, that you should support KABU.
It's so true, Celeste. It's so very true, because really, if you don't, who's going to? It is about actually working together to make sure we are all empowered to have access to the people's airwaves. And here at KBOO Community Radio, we make sure that the community has access to those airwaves. We have an extensive training program where folks can come in from the communities and learn from the ground up, and learn from scratch how to produce audio, do interviews, do podcasting, apply for airtime, all manner of things that we make available to the community, because the community has funded it, and it is only done with your funding, with your support. 877-500-5266 is the number to call this morning, or you can join us online and contribute at kboo.fm. And also stop by 20 Southeast 8th Avenue on your way out and about to just about anywhere in Central Portland. We would love to meet you. We would love to give you a tour of the station and show you exactly how we put your money to use in service of the communities right here at KBOO. 877-500-5266. Consider taking your credit card to the phone and becoming a member of Community Radio instantaneously. Easy enough to do. You can do it for a membership of your choosing. Really, $20 is the minimum amount, but anything more than that is so dearly appreciated. Our average contribution per member is about $90. Think about what you can afford to work into your budget to support Community Radio, again, which supports so many struggles, which is the hub of so much social change work, not to mention access to great music and arts, entertainment,
and public affairs,
all manner of things, all day long, local reporting, investigative reporting. We bring it all to you via the community. It's a community effort, and we're asking you to do your part this morning. 877-500-5266. Or online. You can join us at kboo.fm. I want to thank Maria, who is a new member in Hillsboro. Thank you so much, Maria, for joining in this morning and for participating in KBOO, your community radio station. I bet Maria is realizing that it sounds just a little different now, because she knows that KBOO really is her station, that she is one of our contributors that allows this to go on. And that is so very important. Thank you very much, Maria, for stepping up to the plate this morning. We also want to thank Voodoo Donuts at 22 Southwest 3rd Avenue, the Observatory at 8115 Southeast Stark, and Pizza Fino at 8225 North Denver. We want to thank all of those folks for contributing to our membership drive via feeding our volunteers today to keep people together and active and empowered, taking your calls of support. Again, those calls of support can come into 877-500-5266. Let us know that you're there and that you give a damn about labor struggle, about people working together to live more empowered lives, about people having access to independent thought and information that, in fact, allows us to apply good analysis so that we know how to take right action in our lives, so that we know how to work towards the social change that we want to bring into this world. If you're there, please give us a call right now, 877-500-5266. Help us raise that $500 goal this morning for More Talk Radio. You'll be ever so glad you did, and so will we. It's about doing it together. KBOO Community Radio is all about social change work, and the best social change work is really that which is undertaken collectively. Our values, stated right there in our program mission, our program charter, are peace, justice, democracy, human rights, multiculturalism, freedom of expression, environmentalism, and social change. And we try to live up to those values, both looking at programs that support them on the air and how we advocate for those values, as well as off the air, how we live those values together. And right now we're asking you to back those values with some of your financial support, because in fact, without you, we are nothing. You know, we are the community radio station, and we look to you, the community, to support us. Please do give us a call. $84 is what it takes to keep KBOO coming to you every hour. $84 an hour. Comes out to just over $2,000 a day. What part of that can you yourself sponsor? Are you able to contribute $7 a month? If so, you can sponsor an hour's worth of programming in 1 year's time. It's kind of exciting. It kind of keeps the responsibility amongst many, many people, and that's exactly as it should be, because that is, in fact, what keeps us grassroots. 877-500-5266 or online at kboo.fm. It is your moment to shine, your moment to participate in KBOO Community Radio. Give thanks to Celeste and to Cecil for being here every Monday morning, bringing you thoughtful conversation that inspires and enlivens and keeps us together moving towards that better world. 877-500-5266.
Thank you, Ani. And we'll continuing our conversation, we're coming towards a conclusion with a conversation with Michael Utrick, author of Strike for America, Chicago Teachers Against Austerity. I'm wondering, Mr. Utrick, if you could share some of your thoughts about how unions in particular can push back from against the Democratic Party and that unholy alliance. Certainly, you mentioned the mayor of Chicago, Rahm Emanuel. We have, you know, Secretary of Education, all those people pushing these neoliberal education reform. How can working people and unions in particular fight back against their supposed allies as we look forward towards coming electoral cycles?
Well, I think the most important thing to remember is that rather than thinking first about what form the pushing back against the Democratic Party should look like, or against any of labor's enemies, the first thing to remember is that unionism needs to be democratic and needs to engage with the bulk of its membership in order for any kind of effective program to be carried out. I mean, it's not enough to have leadership who are willing to, you know, have issue tough talk against someone like Rahm Emanuel. You need to be able to have, in Chicago, if Karen Lewis, the president, had issued all kinds of press releases and held press conferences, you know, calling out Mayor Emanuel, none of that would have mattered if there weren't 30,000 teachers out in the streets during the strike, or if there weren't, thousands of the teachers of members of the Chicago Teachers Union who were, were equipped with the ability to organize in their schools and mobilize their community, their parents, and other community members around them. So the reason that the CTU has been able to win is because the powers that be in the city understand that they represent a huge swath of, you know, tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of Chicago, and they have that kind of organizing ability. In terms of pushing back specifically on the Democratic Party, the CTU provides a kind of interesting model in that they recently announced the formation of what they call an independent political organization, or the IPO, which is a project that's being done with another union, SEIU local here, and a community group called Action Now. Their plans for this organization are to do electoral politics a little bit differently in the city. They're planning on running rank-and-file teachers and other community members, training them in order to get them to run for city council positions or state representative positions. They have indicated that they're willing to fight primary battles against Democratic Party members who are particularly right-wing and who are pushing free market education reform or other anti-worker, anti-working people agendas. And they've also indicated that if credible third-party candidacies emerge, someone like Shama Thawant, the socialist city council member in Seattle, if someone like that emerges in Chicago, they would be willing to back those kinds of campaigns. And so there's been an indication that they're willing to make a break with the Democratic Party. They don't think that they can never engage with the Democratic Party again, obviously, mm-hmm. because there are important legislative things that are happening in regards to pensions or whatever that they actually need to be engaged with. But they are not being afraid to both take on that right wing of the Democratic Party, to run rank-and-file teachers and community members for these positions, and to support, you know, credible third-party alternatives. So it offers an interesting model. And, you know, as I said at the beginning, all of this is premised on this work that they've done over the years to engage their union membership in new ways and have them be the ones who are actually leading the union.
Well, we want to thank you for joining us this morning. I want to remind our listeners of your book, Strike for America, Chicago Teachers Against Austerity. The author is Michael Utrick. You can also read more from Michael Utrick at Utrick from the magazine Jacobin. And I want to thank you for joining us this morning and invite those of you who would like to continue this conversation to come out to a forum that KBOO is sponsoring on Wednesday, May 7th, entitled Organizing and Winning for 21st Century Movements. It will be with four speakers who have written about and participated in movements, much like the recent campaign by Portland Public School and PSU professors, talking about how to activate members, how to reach out, how to build a community. That takes place Wednesday at PSU at Smith Center, room 230. Beginning at 7 p.m. It is free, and you donation will support KBOO.
Absolutely. And this is your opportunity to also support KBOO by becoming a member. We really appreciate it when you call into the talk shows, when you come to our events, when you request music, or you inform us about news tips. But you know what? All of those, as important as they are, will only happen when we can get your financial support as well. Most of us who are down here at the station are not employees of KBOO. As a matter of fact, less than 95%. Less than 5%. You know, 95% of us do not get paid there. Now, having said that, we come here because we have a love of community, a love of radio, a love of community radio. And we need you to join in with us because you also love and care about community radio, about being informed, about hearing local voices, local topics, about the opportunities for you or other members of your larger community to actually get involved with the station. We know that's valuable to you because you call in and you tell us, you write us, you come in and you tell us. So now we want to take that next step with you and say, will you stand with us and support us? Keep us strong. 877-500-5266. 877-500-5266. Right, Ani?
It's exactly right, Celeste. And again, for your $60 contribution, we do still have one copy of Strike for America, Chicago Teachers Against Austerity. You can get that right now for your $60 contribution, but you really do need to act fast. You have been listening to Cecil and Celeste interview Michael Utrick this morning here on More Talk Radio, providing you all the information about this the struggle. And it is such an important struggle. It has really, it's going to be one of those things that we look back on as, I think, one of those turning points. And that right now, you can get a book that has so much more detail and really take it to heart. And then support KBOO Community Radio all at the same time with your contribution of just $60. You can do it $5 a month. You can do it all at once. You can put it on your credit card, or we can send you a return envelope that you could send back with a money order or check. However you would like to do it, we ask that you just take a moment right now and commit to your community, commit to KBOO Community Radio, and let us know that you're there and that you are one of our sponsors, that you are one of our contributors. 877-500-5266. We do still have a few hundred dollars left of that $500 goal this morning, and we want to hear from you to fill in that gap. We know that you rely on KBOO to provide you all manner of insightful information that you can use to really kind of make sense of this world around us. It's kind of crazy out there, and we really do know that the importance of community radio is providing you information that's relevant from so many perspectives, so you can take that information and put together your own analysis. We don't tell you what to think. We don't tell you what's right and wrong. We figure that you have internal compasses that can go ahead and decide those things. What we do is provide you information from various perspectives so that you can make informed decisions and that you can choose to involve yourself in the social change actions that makes sense to you, because you live an empowered life and you live within a community structure. Community structure requires that we all have access to some information. KABU is a hub of community that inspires so many conversations and so many cross conversations so that we can, in fact, see how struggles fit together, how they nest, and how we can support each other in making the world a better place. Right now, we're asking for your support work in supporting KABU. It is, again, that information resource that works for you all day long, every day. Right there, we need to have you be there for us. 877-500-5266. Again, you can charge your membership. You can put it on a credit card or a debit card. You could do it monthly, just $5, $6, $7 a month. Whatever you can afford, we would love to have your participation here at KABU today. 877-500-5266. Online, you can contribute at kboo.fm or by phone, 877-500-5266.
And you are tuned to KBOO in Portland. Coming right up is the OMO Variety Hour, the Walmart working class socialism from below, and remembering Paul Robeson, senior and junior. At 10:15 on Locus Focus, host Barbara Bernstein interviews writer Elizabeth Colbert, whose new book, The Sixth Extinction, An Unnatural History. At 11 on Health Watch, host David Naiman speaks with best-selling author and renowned herbalist Rosemary Gladstar about 21 herbs proven to be effective at soothing and even preventing stress symptoms. And at 11:30 on Madness Radio, B. Nev Jones, psychiatric anthropology researcher, discusses how people diagnosed with schizophrenia who hear voices and experience psychosis can help to change the way we understand and respond to these experiences. And now, stay tuned for the OMO Variety Hour.
Lord, I wish I was a mole in the ground. I wish I was a mole in the ground. I was a mole in the ground, Lord, I root this mountain down. Lord, I wish I was a mole in the ground. I wish I was a mole in the ground. I wish I was a mole in the ground.
You were